Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 15th, the Ides of September, Anno Domini 2018, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 5 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes... Did anything happen this week?
No, it was pretty boring.
Pretty boring. Oh, wait, there was that one thing, that company, Apple.
That trillion-dollar company.
No. That trillion-dollar company, Apple, has long had a playbook for iPhones, its most important product. Keep rolling out bigger, faster, and more expensive models. On Wednesday, it repeated that strategy by introducing another round of iPhones that are, you guessed it, bigger, faster, and more expensive.
Bottom line, that was the big thing.
Now... They are, as you know, iPhone 10 is the icon is an X, the Roman numeral 10, so it's iPhone X. So the new models are the XR, the 10R, the 10S, and the 10S Max. However, the 10S is an X followed by an S, so the jokes are already starting about the iPhone XS.
Or extra small.
Or extra small, but mostly about
the
iPhone.
It's actually the medium-sized one.
When you hear the pricing, you'll know that it's excess. The model with a 6.5-inch screen, the iPhone XS Max, that's a mouthful, is Apple's biggest iPhone ever and will start at, pay attention now, it will start at $1,100. I wouldn't pay that for two laptops.
That's three Chromebooks.
Right. Of course, last year when Apple debuted the iPhone X, its starting price was $1,000. $999.
And not 99 cents. One of the very few companies that doesn't put the 99 cents on.
Right. More notable, perhaps, was how much Apple is now evolving its smartwatch into a clearly health-related device. The company showed off a new Apple Watch with an electronic heart sensor approved by the Food and Drug Administration. That could lead to new implications for healthcare and prove to be a major selling point for a device that has played second fiddle to the iPhone. The iPhone XS and... like I said, the iPhone XS jokes are already out there, is a premium model with a 5.8-inch screen, and the iPhone XS Max with a 6.5-inch screen is Apple's biggest ever smartphone. The company also showed the iPhone XR, an entry-level model, with a 6.1-inch screen. The XS model, I really can't look at that and say XS, I want to say XS. Models are generally sped-up versions of last year's iPhone X. Apple emphasized the phone's advanced processor, durable glass, and so-called Super Retina OLED display with a wide color gamut.
P3.
The iPhone XR will come in white, black, red, blue, and yellow. Well, or yellow, I assume. I assume it's not all five colors. Yeah. And is just as fast as the XS models. It has a single-lens camera, unlike the XS model, which has a dual-lens camera system. It uses LCD, a less expensive screen technology than the OLED used for the XS. And the casing is made of aluminum, not stainless steel, like the premium phones are composed of. It's obvious why Apple and other phone makers like Samsung keep enlarging their phones. Phones with bigger screens are selling well. When presented with the choice between a small phone and a bigger one, most people will go with the latter. That's similar to how just about everyone wants a big-screen TV. By going bigger, Apple is trying to grow not just by raising prices, but also by getting customers to use their devices even more. Research shows people with larger smartphones use them more, particularly to watch movie and play games. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like to remind you, is, are you ready to pay, and this is just the starting price, by the way, you can go up to $1,500.
With 512 gigs of storage.
Right.
It's more than some computers.
Right. Are you ready to pay $1,100 for a phone? Your choices are, oh, yes, I must have the best iPhone. Perhaps that should be, oh, yes, I must have the best iPhone. Or it must be better, right? Or I might wait a bit. Or not even if it does the dishes, which is the cleanest thing I could say.
Yeah.
So far, we've got 27 votes, vast majority of you, not even if it does the dishes. That'll prove to be wrong, because I think very many people, the Apple fanboys of both genders, who must have the latest
have
Apple.
They got to have the latest and greatest.
We'll pay $1,500 for a phone.
Oh, yeah.
Some people will bulk and just buy the 10R.
Well, what's neat about the 10, excuse me, the maybe not, the 10R, is it's almost everything the 10 is, or was now,
right.
For $250 less. So that's sort of how they talked about it. It's a lower price point for people to get into the 10 technology. And for most people, they buy it on the monthly plan anyway. So the 10S Max is $55 a month. I'll pay that.
I won't.
That's two of us that won't.
And I know there are those of you who will want to say somewhat more about this. So if you scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you will see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. And so far, at least, the first item under poll discussion is 15 September 18. Are you ready to pay $1,100 for a phone?
Oh, there'll be their lines. You can bet on
that.
Well,
you can pre-order it now, and then it will get delivered to your door, so you don't need to have a line. Apparently, so Angela Ahrens was brought in to be the VP of retail. She apparently doesn't like lines, so she started this whole pre-order stuff. So you pre-order it online, and then it just shows up at your house. You don't.
Well,
have
they've
it.
Been
you're
doing
still in line. You're
right.
Just in a virtual line,
but. People like people like waiting in line. There was a whole social camaraderie there. You meet the same people in that line every year.
Right, right, right.
So I still know people who won't bother pre-ordering, or the pre-order will sell out too fast. So so you can pre-order now if you want. The pre-order sells out too fast, and the Apple stores will get some phones for sale that haven't been pre-ordered. So that line will still
be
there.
That's nothing new, though. But I mean, on the Galaxy Notes. For the longest time, when they came out to replace the 7 there, you could pre-order the new one.
Right.
And have it delivered right to your door. Mm-hmm. Once it came, you could take it on in. They'd slip out the chips, and reprogram it for you and set it up, and boom, there you are.
And maybe because Apple has shown people will pay $1,000 for a phone, the Galaxy Note 9, the S9 also. So several other companies are now selling $1,000 and up phones.
And what that does is it leaves an interesting niche in the market for companies who say, like the XR, the 10R, mm-hmm. Who say, our phone is almost as good and it's $400 cheaper.
Right. So I hear a lot of good things about the OnePlus 6, which is $529. Never settle is there. We are settling for a OnePlus 6 at $529 because we don't want to pay
$1,500, right.
Yeah. But, so there are a lot of Android phones that do cost less. You're not forced to buy an iPhone.
Right. Some people are.
Some people are, yeah.
Some people are. They must have the latest Apple thing because, it's all about keeping up with the Joneses, etc.
And they all have notches now. That was the big thing on the iPhone X, where there's a camera notch. Well, all the other massive phones have the notches, too.
The notches, you got. Unless you're going to hide. Some companies talk. Has experimented with hiding the camera behind
working
the notch.
On that, yeah, and a fingerprint reader behind the screen.
Behind
too.
The screen, right.
It just hasn't worked out very well yet.
Right. Yeah, at any rate, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
All right, we did get somebody that wound up texting us on the text line at 585-209-9010, and they said, when I recorded the Jazz 90.1 stream using Total Recorder, the file created playback at a high speed, and it is ununderstandable. Can't understand it. Would have been easy. Didn't used to happen. I recorded other streams with no problems, e.g. radio.com.
I honestly don't know. I haven't used Total Recorder in a long time. Are you still using it?
No, I haven't had to. Everything on demand now, you can go back and, you know.
Right.
An FAQ about if it plays back too fast.
Yeah, there is. Yes. So go ahead. Steve will put that on
here. Yeah. So what can sometimes happen is you may not have noticed that you recorded it at, say, 48K, and you're playing it at 96K.
Oh, yeah.
So that can be an issue. There are also programs that you can slow down the playback, audio editor, like Audacity. There's one called the Amazing Slowdowner, and its purpose is to slow down recording. So apparently this is a fairly widespread problem for someone to make a slowdowner program.
Probably.
But, I'll post this link on the FAQ.
We've got the archive.
But yeah, it apparently is a normal thing, and Steve is going to post post a link to it.
Sometimes occurs when the kernel mold filter driver, and that was resolved in 8.6 build 7190.
So make sure you're running the latest version of Total Control, Total Recall.
Yeah, well, they were
Total
saying,
Recorder.
Yeah, Total
sure.
Recorder. That they didn't have this
the
issue.
The other one was a movie, two movies.
Yeah. Didn't have the issue with other stations, so
who knows? But particularly let us know if it happens again next week. But also check out the link that Steve has put up and see if any of that
seems to help.
Yeah, it's unusual. There are about a million ways to record our show. Steve, of course, does it. On YouTube, we both record it audio stream, and so it is possible to do it in a dozen different ways. And if as Dave said, if you miss all of those, we have our archive online. Steve generally has it up on a Sunday afternoon, so unless you're planning to listen to it at 2 o'clock on a Saturday, you should be fine. But yeah, it's a very interesting issue that we've always had, whether it's audio or video. There are so many, as Steve says, the beautiful thing about standards is there are so many of them.
Yeah.
There are so many standards, and they are all just slightly incompatible, not only with each other, but within their versions. Mm-hmm. They are often incompatible. So if you're running an older version of the playback software or the record software, and let's say there's a mismatch between your record software and your playback software, that can be some of the same issues. So
I've also seen sometimes where, especially on an internet stream, it might buffer and slow down a little bit.
Right.
And so then the stream tries to speed up to catch up to where it left off.
Right. So if depending on the speed and quality.
Variety of possibilities.
Right. So it also depends on the quality of your internet connection. Yeah.
A lot of variables there.
It depends.
But yeah, Steve records it. I record it. I think I record it in two different places. Yeah, I do.
We have a couple of people in the forums that record it as a tertiary backup.
Yep, and we appreciate that. So yeah, there's a lot to that. And you can record it on your phone nowadays. And with 512 gig of storage space, that's not RAM, right?
That's storage. Yeah.
512 gig of storage, you can put five, I think.
It always annoys me.
No, there's 60 gig, I think.
Yeah. Meg.
60 meg.
The MP3 is 60 meg,
right,
yeah.
So
the video, full quality video is like a gig and a half.
Right.
But it always annoys me when people mix up memory and storage because they both have the same unit.
Right.
You don't put a gallon of milk in your car because they're both sold by the gallon.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesca, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. computer problems? Get answers from the experts. Sound Bites, noon to 2 Saturdays, only on Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. So here's another Apple story. This one is not as nice.
Humorous.
Purchasing digital copies of usually physical goods is so easy and convenient these days, most of us don't give second thought about it. We don't have to carry books around, deal with fragile DVDs, or fumble around for cartridges whenever we want to switch games. You children today don't know the struggle. But depending on where...
Use the eraser, clean off the contacts.
And blowing in a cartridge, and you puppies. But depending on where you bought said digital content, buying might not exactly mean what you think it means. That was the bitter truth that a Canadian iTunes user learned when Apple quietly removed content he had already bought because the items were no longer being sold on their digital content store. Anders G. Da Silva took to Twitter to reveal his exchange with an iTunes store customer support representative over the sudden disappearance of his purchased movies, videos. The only explanation he was given was that the content provider of those videos pulled out the movies from the iTunes store. In exchange, he was being given credits to rent, not buy, other movies. That's bad customer service. De Silva contested the action and even the reparation, explaining that he had already bought those movies and they should remain regardless of the content provider. Customer support explained that iTunes is only a storefront and has no control over that aspect of the business. It also increased the offered rental credits. The situation, however, isn't completely new and has, in fact, been the heart of the whole DRM situation, especially with music and games. It's a question of who really owns the content you, quote, buy. The words buy and purchase do imply that you are buying them and purchasing them and they are yours, but digital distribution has turned that definition on its head. In this particular instance, what you really buy from Apple, Amazon, and Google are effectively licenses to access the digital content. You don't own the content, and neither does Apple, for that matter. If a publisher decides to pull out their products for one reason or another, you are screwed. So, how many digital purchases do you have? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Why doesn't he just restore from backup?
Because he had them up on iTunes and didn't back them up because he didn't think he needed to.
Which is another problem, but you should always back up everything. I'm running into something similar on my iPad. My drone camera.
Yeah.
has an app that
your camera drone has a drone camera.
Not quite.
Okay.
The camera's separate. My FPV camera has an app that you control it with. And on my iPad, there's a setting you can turn on that will offload apps you don't use very often to save space.
Sure.
And then download them back again whenever you want to.
Sure.
Assuming they're still in the store. So on my iPad, I hadn't used that app in a while, and it's not available anymore, so I can't download it. On my iPhone, I still have it and can use it. And the company hasn't released a new version of the app, so that's part of the problem.
Right.
So, and my battery isn't lasting as long as it used to, so I got to find the new FPV camera.
Right. Wow, yeah.
Fortunately, there's a lot more available now than there was in the past.
Right. And so we see this more and more as time goes on. Yeah. We don't own the content we're purchasing. People think they bought Windows. They did not. Yep. They bought a license to run a particular version of Windows. Now, Microsoft generally upgrades that license to the next version, but they may not do that, and you have no recourse because what you bought was a license for a particular version. The same thing, I believe, is true of iOS. You don't own that operating system. Apple does, and they are leasing it to you. You bought a license to run it for the duration of that operating system.
The other issue we're running into with especially music purchases is they technically can't be willed. So if you pass away,
Right.
Your digital content can't be willed to someone.
Right.
And so what we're seeing happen is people are just passing their password down for the account it was purchased under.
Right.
So that your heirs can download the music under your password to their device.
Yep. And it's a bigger problem than we all think it is, because we don't think about it.
Right. Even just bank account passwords, computer passwords, make sure your spouse or your attorney, somebody has those passwords. So if you are, you know, incapacitated or pass away, someone can still get into your accounts and do stuff.
Right. And for those of us who are using a password manager, make sure that that person has the account password to the password manager.
Several of the password managers have I forget what they call it, like a spouse account, where a spouse can request access to your passwords. And if you don't say no, it lets them in, assuming you're dead. So that can stop the aggrieved spouse from deleting all your stuff, because you get the message, you know, your spouse wants your passwords. You can say no. Right. If you respond, then they can't. But there have been a couple of programs out like that, that if you don't respond to this message, it assumes you're dead and will delete your stuff.
Right.
Is that the old joker? if I die, you know, make sure you come to my house and erase all my porn before my wife gets to it.
Oops.
Now, what I don't see is, can I download? I know you used to be able to. Can I download my movies from Google Play? I'll have to look into
download
that.
Download and save a copy. So you can on the computer and on your phone, you can download and save a copy, and that copy should keep playing.
But does it have a timestamp on it that it lasts so long?
Not if you buy it. If you rent it, there's a timestamp. But if you buy it, it's just a file. But a lot of people don't save all those giant files on their computer because it takes up so much space, because you can just re-download it later, assuming it's still in the store.
Right.
So that's that would probably have helped this person. If they had a downloaded copy, it probably would still work.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I suspect that it would, yes.
To burn it off to a DVD.
Well, that's just it, but you have to actually do that. So I've got...
Goes right in line with people should also do backups.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Shoulda, coulda, wouldas.
Would you cry if you lost everything on your computer?
The
answer is usually yes.
Yes, people have already told us, can you get this back for me?
Yeah, we had a customer call us this morning. Their daughter had a problem with their phone, and they took it to the Apple store. And the other thing. And they asked her if she had a backup and if they could erase the phone. And she said yes and okay. So they did. And then she says, well, where's all my stuff? You said you had a backup and we could erase it. Well, I didn't know what that meant.
Oh, yes, you did.
Well, then don't say yes. If you don't know what it means, say you don't know what it means.
Right.
And so, yeah, so they called us saying, is there any way we can get our stuff back? Not really, especially if it's been overwritten by a new OS load.
Right. Restore. Right, because it wipes the memory completely.
You can back up to your computer with iTunes. You can back up to iCloud on the phone itself. So there are opportunities to back up.
Right.
And especially iCloud backup is on by default. You have to manually turn it off.
Right. So if you didn't turn it off, you're in luck. But if you did turn it off, oh well.
Yeah.
I mean, that was your decision.
Mm-hmm.
All right, to the phones. Batman. Our first call. I'm sorry.
Batman,
to the phones, Batman. To the bat phone, Robin. Our first caller is Ed from Ithaca, New York. Hi, Ed. What's up?
Hi. Who's Batman and who's Robin?
Exactly. Nobody wants to be the sidekick.
Windows 10 laptop. It's been running very slowly. Everything seems to take about three times longer than usual. And that seems to be particularly, although I'm not sure, when I have an application called, a program called APowerSoft, which is records whatever is coming through the computer. This only happened in the last couple weeks. The only other thing that I can identify is that a couple weeks ago I was in New York City and used the hotel's internet. But I've done all the scans twice, and they haven't come up with anything.
And if have you checked what is it, process viewer, to see what all your processes are?
The process manager, whatever it's called, task manager.
So that will show you what tasks are running and how much of the CPU they're taking up. If there's something unusual in there running, using your CPU, it could be something so new the scans don't find it yet. So lucky you. You were the first.
I won the lottery, huh?
Yeah. Come on down.
I keep Taskmaster Manager open, and it hasn't shown anything fishy.
Now, when you say you have a PowerSoft, are you running that constantly?
No.
Oh, okay. Because it's just a screen recorder, right? And so...
Right.
Yeah, so all right.
So if that were running, it would be. Listen to you on the computer, I could record it at the same time.
Yeah.
Right.
And if that were running, that would be pretty processor intensive.
Right.
Yes, but this only started happening a couple weeks ago.
And you've danced the security tango.
Year or two or three. Yeah.
How much memory do you have?
I have 8 gigabytes of RAM.
Should be enough.
Yeah, it should. And you say you danced the security tango and found nothing?
I danced it. I think the second time Malwarebytes might have come up with something. But it eliminated them or quarantined them or whatever.
Right.
You might want to do a hard drive scan, check disk. If you go into My Computer and do a properties on your hard drive, there's a, what do they call it? It's called check disk.
Check disk.
I think it's diagnostics or something like that on the drive itself.
Okay.
And that will take a look at your drive and see if maybe something's going wrong with your drive.
Or it could be just full.
It's not.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, not nearly.
How old is this machine?
I'll do that. Let me ask you a different question quickly.
Sure.
LibreOffice or OpenOffice? Do you have a preference?
I do. LibreOffice. It's newer. LibreOffice split off from OpenOffice.
Uh-huh.
And honestly took most of the better programmers at the time, at least. And has some newer features and seems to be the better choice for everybody.
Okay, great. Thanks for all your good information.
Thanks. Good luck.
All right, thanks. Bye.
Bye. The mysteries of Windows. Part of it is... you find, also if you don't reboot Windows regularly, it has memory leaks. So what I didn't get to ask that is...
It usually crashes and often enough that you have to reboot it.
Well, but eventually, but first yeah. It starts running slower.
Yep.
Right? So if in fact he leaves it running all the time and doesn't reboot it, that can be an issue. I know people like to, particularly Linux people, love their uptimes. But my suggestion is generally reboot your system every once in a while because that's a good thing to do.
My uptime is only 7 days.
Yep.
That's right. I had to reboot it last week before the show.
Yep.
Actually, that's usually not a bad idea before I set up all my recording stuff. Let's reboot the computer.
Yep. Well, and the reality is that every single operating system was written by a human being. And therefore, every single operating system has little problems like memory leaks. And so rebooting regularly does not hurt any operating system anywhere. Okay, back to the...
Tablets included.
Tablets, your phone. You should reboot your phone once in a while. All of that, when it starts running slow, reboot it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Brighton, New York. What's up, Joe?
Hi. I have a Linux question. I have a Linux Mate installed. I had wiped Windows 10. Install my wife's old computer.
Yeah.
And now it says there is zero boot. It says the boot has 0 megabytes disk space remaining. And
yeah.
I can't apply more updates, or I can't even put on a booted disk of Linux Mint, which I have to replace it.
Right.
And I suspect that's a partition problem, and I have no idea how to change that partition or to wipe the Mate out.
Yeah, okay. So here's the deal. When you upgrade Linux, it saves the older versions. And you get to have those older versions in case you want to go back to one. But every once in a while, it is not a bad idea to clean out your boot sector, your boot partition. And the way you do that is you go into a terminal.
Right.
And you type sudo, S-U-D-O, space, apt-get, which is apt-get, space, auto-remove, A-U-T-O-R-E-M-O-V-E. When you hit enter, it will ask you for your password, the password that you use to get into Linux. And then it will do a cleanup. When you are done with that, you now type sudo again, S-U-D-O, space, update grub, U-P-D-A-T-E dash G-R-U-B. Then you reboot.
Could you repeat that update grub? After you said grub, what did you say?
I said then you reboot.
Oh, just reboot.
Yeah. Well, okay. wait till it's done. Wait till it's done doing the update, and then reboot your system. So it's sudo apt-get auto remove and sudo update grub.
And then maybe repartition to give yourself a bigger boot volume.
Well, and you can repartition to give yourself a bigger boot volume, but if you do this semi-regularly, it'll be fine. Steve's going to put up a link to how to do that, and we're going to take a quick break. Back in just
Wonderful.
A couple. Thank you. We're back just a couple minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Meenik, Francesco, and you. 40 minutes after the hour. Soundbites member supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. You were asking before the break if he needed to increase his boot partition. You can do that. You can also, depending on the version of Linux and how you're setting it up, you can make the boot directory not be a separate partition, which now means you've got gigabytes worth of storage.
Yeah.
In either case, you still want to keep your boot partition fairly clean.
Could you make that a cron job?
But
on the off chance you need that old,
auto remove leaves the current version and the previous version. So you always can go back one. Rarely does anybody need to go back six.
Yeah.
Right. So, I tend, every third or fourth, kernel update to run auto remove.
Yeah. Windows has that same sort of problem where it keeps the previous system states after KBs get installed.
Right, right.
Now, on the Apple, it keeps a receipt that you installed it, but it doesn't actually keep the old version.
Yeah. I like to be able to go back at least the one.
Yeah.
Right? But, yeah, so being able to do auto-remove is nice, but I wouldn't automate auto-remove.
Yeah. You want a manual auto-remove, not auto-remove. Yeah.
But yeah, once you've done that, so I did that. In fact, and that's why I had to look it up, because I only do it every fourth or fifth time, and so I didn't quite have it in my head.
Yeah.
But I just did it. In fact, last week, and got rid of I think four or five versions that were quite clearly filling up to 100 on my laptop. It's 100 meg on my desktop. It's just a directory, and it was very full. It was very large, so I cleaned that all up, and it was it actually boots a little bit faster when it doesn't have to manage all those multiple things. So,
should I load this one? No. Should I load this one? No. Should I load this one? Right. No. Should I load this one? Okay.
Right, exactly. Now it's only got two, and it only has to make allowances for one extra.
Yeah.
Yeah. And talking about booting, there are things called cold boot attacks. Who use to extract sensitive data such as encrypted keys, encryption keys, and passwords from system memory. These have been given new blood by researchers from F-Secure. First documented in 2008, Cold Blue detects, depend on the ability of RAM to remember values, even across system reboots. That's right. If you reboot your machine, it doesn't necessarily entirely wipe out memory. In response, systems were modified to wipe their memory early during the boot process, but F-Secure found that in many PCs, tampering with the firmware settings can force the memory wipe to be skipped, once again making cold boot attacks possible. Dynamic random access memory, DRAM, the type of memory every computer uses, is typically refreshed every 64 milliseconds. Trivia point. With the individual DRAM cells engineered to retain their value for at least that long under normal operating conditions. But outside normal operating conditions, the situation changes. At high temperatures, the memory needs to be refreshed more often. That's why it's bad for your computer to get too hot, because it's set to refresh every 64 milliseconds. And if it starts losing memory at 50 milliseconds, you lose the ability to run your machine. And that's why you don't want your machine to get too hot. On the other side, however, cool the DRAM down and it needs to be refreshed less often. Cool it enough and it can go tens of seconds between refreshes. This discovery formed the basis of the 2008 research and discovery of the cold boot attack. The industry response to this attack was to make the system wipe memory early in the boot process. This doesn't help if someone wants to move the chips to a different machine, but in systems with soldered down memory, it should protect against rebooting into a different operating system and dumping memory that way. By the time the different operating system is loaded, the memory has already been wiped, leaving nothing to dump. But alas, nothing in the PC world is simple. The new attack takes advantage of this design in a way that seems rather obvious. Suppress the memory wipe, then perform a cold boot attack as normal. The system boots up, sees that it shouldn't wipe the memory, loads the attacker's operating system, and allows memory to be dumped, including all the encryption keys and other secrets contained within. The attack is effective against typical corporate laptops. In response, Microsoft has updated its BitLocker configuration recommendations to require a BitLocker PIN to start and disable system suspending, allowing only hibernation, which wipes encryption keys from memory anyway. Apple says that its systems equipped with its T2 security chip are unaffected because they don't store secrets in main memory at all. Beyond that, however, the researchers say there's no obvious fix to the problem. Now, the first thing you're going to say is, well, they have to have physical access to my computer. Well, yes, they do. But in a corporate environment in particular, or if you happen to walk away from your laptop in a cafe, people have physical access to your computer. That's pretty easy.
A lot of the big companies we work with, they have policies where if you're going to leave your office, you lock your laptop in the drawer and you lock your office door.
That's exactly right. And it has to be that.
Hardly anyone follows that rule, but that's the rule.
Yeah. But if you just walk out, even if you lock your door, I can force the door, come in, grab the laptop, do the cold boot attack, and own all the stuff in your laptop. Put it back the way it was. Nobody will know.
And there's a tricky thing where you can open the computer up, freeze the RAM with Freon or other cryogen, pull the RAM out and leave, and your computer's still sitting there on the desk.
That's what this is.
Yeah.
That's this. So it's an enhanced attack. Yeah, yep. It's an enhanced version of that.
Yeah.
If you have, like I said, if you have RAM that is slotted rather than soldered in.
Yeah, and then you just think your computer broke and take it to IT.
Right.
Meanwhile, the bad guys have your RAM cards and are sucking all the data off of it.
Right, because like I said, if you cool it down enough, it's tens of seconds before it needs to be refreshed.
Mm-hmm.
So you pull it, you throw it in your laptop, which is already ready to go, boot it up. My laptop boots in like 5 seconds because it's Linux on a SSD card.
Yeah.
So it about 8 seconds to the final thing, but within 2 or 3 seconds, it's sending electricity into the RAM chip, so it's all good.
Yep.
So if you've got a version of the operating system that doesn't wipe memory, and that's easy enough to make, you can have all that stuff. Now, is that going to, most of you in your home machines, for most of you, no, this is not a problem. But for the corporate environment, it's a huge, huge issue. And it just points out that computers are much less secure than we think they are.
And corporate espionage has been such a problem anyway.
Right.
And now it can get even worse. Now, so instead of wiping memory on boot, how about it wipes memory on shutdown?
But the problem is it's not shutting down either.
If you just pull the cord and crash it.
Well, but you're not even crashing it. You're just turning it over and freezing the chips while it's still running.
Yep.
So if you think your computer is still secure, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
So that's why Apple is soldering the RAM on the motherboard. It's to enhance your security.
No, it's cheaper.
It's not from upgrading
less part,
later.
Right. It's cheaper.
Yeah, those sockets are an extra component that they have to surface mount.
It's a tenth of a second of a penny for each one.
Yeah.
So,
and that adds up.
And that adds up, but when you're selling millions of computers, that adds up. So, and I get it. I do get it. But the reality is that it can be stolen if you're not careful.
Plus, I would imagine, you know, like anything else, the fewer moving parts, the more efficient it can be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and by not having those sockets, that's one less contact point with the main, say, motherboard, that now you're doing direct contact with the memory into this the motherboard than having those slots that you got to first snap them down.
It's also a shorter distance to the motherboard.
Yep.
And it doesn't seem like much. It's what, a centimeter or two?
Yeah, if
but
that.
But at the speed of light,
and
when you're doing that in a billion times a second, that adds up to a lot of time.
And if it can cut cost, all the way around.
It's all the way around.
Cut costs.
Faster,
and
cuts costs.
And improve performance.
Right. Right. Yep. And so that you know, that's, we talk about what makes computers expensive and what makes them faster, and usually those two things are completely incompatible. You can either you can have either way, but in this particular case, faster and cheaper work together.
Yep.
And upgradability goes down.
And upgradability goes down, but you know, from any computer manufacturer's point of view, you don't think you have enough memory, buy a new computer.
Yeah, especially because you rarely buy the memory upgrade from the manufacturer, even when he could.
Well, like they say, they build in planned obsolescence.
Right, right.
It's just a fact of life.
Right. Well, and people are, and that's, you know, part of the 512 gig for the 10S Max.
Yep.
Nobody thinks they need an extensive amount of storage on their phone, and then they find they run out of space all the time.
They take photos and video too much.
They take photos and videos. Yeah. Well,
that's been a fact of life ever since we started putting hard cards.
4 gig phones?
Yeah. hard cards in computers.
Yep. Right.
Oh, that's all the space you're ever going
to
need.
My 400K floppy drive used to be able to hold the OS, the app, and a whole bunch of documents.
That's right. The Apple Cider, right?
Yep.
The 5 megabyte hard drive that sat next to the Apple III held every single business program that was available for the Apple III and still had many megabytes for data.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It was revolutionary. It was a huge amount of space.
It was all you were ever going to need.
That's exactly right.
Yep.
And in fact, they were correct, assuming that you weren't human.
Yeah.
Because humans tend to want everything at their fingertips all the time.
Well, the average phone is so much more powerful than the first, you know, desktop.
Right. But because people want everything at their fingertips all the time, they never remove data. And I don't mean just throw it away. I mean back it up.
Yep.
Stick it in those days on a floppy and put it in a drawer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then I'd have to go actually walk across the room and get it.
Yeah.
Even I'm not that lazy.
But yet if they lose it and didn't back it up.
Well, then it's your fault.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, can you get this back for me? From where?
Yeah.
No. Yeah. No, it cannot be done.
Jackie was on a cleaning spree yesterday and today at our office. And
yeah.
She's going through a cabinet to try to straighten it out to put more stuff in the cabinet. And she found a battery for a PowerBook G4. You know, new in the box. Why do we have this? Because we used to sell those. Someone might want it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a 15-year-old computer. The battery's probably not good anymore, but...
Well, that's true.
It was sitting there in the box because we didn't sell that one.
That's true. I'm in the process of cleaning up the computer room, and I'm finding 20-year-old laptops.
Mm-hmm.
That I just said, you know what? It that's still a, works.
It's a museum now.
Right, right. It still works. I may need it someday.
What day?
I don't think so.
You want to get a new Chromebook.
Exactly right. I don't need
to add one more.
The only laptop I need to keep is my original CR48, the reference model for the Chromebooks. It probably doesn't work anymore. I didn't even plug it into C, but I'm never going to get rid of it. Nope. You know, so, but yeah, it mostly we don't need all those old machines. And those machines, you know, they have 256 meg of RAM and they have 386 processors. There's nothing you can run out of them except maybe Puppy Linux or damn small Linux. And even those are not terribly useful these days.
Yeah.
So I got to take them to the when they have one of those free recycling days. I got to take it to that. So we'll see.
That was my baby. I used that for years.
I used it for years and it worked great. Yeah. And,
see, and now it's not a storage closet anymore. It's a museum.
Right.
Well, yeah, what do they call it in the basement of the museum with the stuff they don't have room to exhibit yet?
Yeah, right. But yeah, so it's like having offsite storage. Once it's there, yeah. You never think about it anymore.
Yep.
But you better have that offsite storage so that if you ever need it, you got it.
Because you never know.
You never know. And it's it's the kind of thing we all do. We all want to keep our computers because they're running and we're familiar with them and we know they work. We all want to keep them for 20 years, but that just isn't going to happen anymore. All right, that music tells me you've wasted an hour of your life with this nine. But you're going to get another chance to do it again, assuming I can find my tongue and get it to work again, because we'll be back with a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right, you're listening to Soundbites right here on the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. Back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco. So take your little bio break and then come back because there's a whole lot more fun ahead.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. For no discernible reason, you're listening to Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Now, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415, just like Randy did, hung up. And hopefully we'll get Randy back in just a minute. I don't quite know what happened there. But while we wait for Randy, I will read another news item. Sorry, Randy. Maybe Randy was down in the storm and got cut off.
I don't know where he was, but it was very hard to even hear him. And it was quiet here in the studio.
Right.
But it was still very difficult to even hear him. So.
Right.
I don't know.
All right. So they're just speaking of Chrome OS. Chrome OS 70, which should be out in a month, will include native support for SMB file shares, the system message block networking format used by Microsoft, giving Chrome OS built-in access to files stored on Windows servers. With this, Chrome OS users can add SMB file shares to the Files app and use them to store and load documents. Currently, using these network resources requires the use of an extension that adds a similar ability to add file shares to the Files app. Google has been working to make Files a more capable application, As well as integrating support for network files, the company is also experimenting with giving it more access to Android files, something that will streamline the use of Android applications by exposing their data files to Chrome OS apps. The System Message Block, or SMB, support helps smooth the pain point when mixing Chromebooks with other systems. It makes it easier to use Chrome OS with corporate file servers, which everybody loves, home networked storage devices, and, of course, Windows PCs. Instead of needing the extra extension to be installed, these things will just work out of the box. That's going to prove helpful as Chromebooks move beyond their K-12 education stronghold, as it will mean that Chromebooks more seamlessly interoperate with mixed platform networks. In particular, network storage intended for Windows machines will be instantly accessible to Chrome OS machines. The built-in support might also prove a bit more reliable than the extension. The reviews for the add-on are atrocious thus far, with many complaints of poor performance or outright failure to function entirely, especially when handling large files. I'm personally really looking forward to that. So our question, of course, is, would you like to access Windows Network Shares with a Chromebook? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Just like Tom did from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi.
Yeah, I got myself in a little bit of a mess here. I accidentally changed the language on my Windows 10 machine so that it's coming up in Greek. I can't read Greek. I'm trying to get the track through the menus to get back to English.
One of the tricks that we found, because we've had this happen on people, it's usually Austrian, because that's, you know, A at the top of the list.
Right.
If you have another computer, you can kind of follow along with the computer you can read and do the same things on the computer you can't.
Yeah, running parallel the two screens together,
yeah,
to see where you are. Unfortunately, at the present time, I don't have that option. I only have one machine at this point.
Yeah.
There are, well, I'm trying to find a video of doing it. They could, like, watch on your phone.
Well, but at least the steps are there.
Yeah, and start, settings, time, region.
Oh, I can go on my phone. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
But what, yes, and what Steve will do is put a link to this, which you can read on your phone,
right,
as you do it on your computer.
Yeah, that should work out, I guess. I'll get there eventually.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, since Greek uses the Greek alphabet and not the Roman alphabet we're used to, it's kind of hard to tell sort of what that word means.
Yes, yeah,
right.
That's another issue. Right?
It's all Greek. No, I'm not going to do it. I'm not.
Bada bing, try the
original thing to say. But
yeah, right. That's why I'm not saying it. But yeah. Well, that's the old joke. I speak every language but Greek.
Yep. Yeah. Speak Italian.
And somebody says, I can't. It's all Greek to me. Yeah, right. But Steve. Steve will put up a link to how to do that, and then you said, you can just follow along on your phone.
Yeah, that should work. Thanks very much.
Yeah, good luck.
Right, bye.
Bye. That many years ago, one of my faculty members came to me and said, I've accidentally set my Mac to Chinese.
Oh, that's rough.
Yeah. Well, luckily, at that point, I was using a Mac quite regularly,
mm-hmm,
and I just said, okay, this menu item would be the fourth menu item over.
Yeah.
So I was able to actually get there, and I scrolled through this list and saw English, hit it, bang, it was done. But I couldn't do it now with a gun to my head. You know, I don't use Macs every day anymore. So it's a long thing. But yeah, it's very hard. It's very hard to do. For those of you who are prefer English, and don't really speak a lot of other languages, maybe you should take a moment and figure out how to change to another language, write down those steps, and put them somewhere.
Yeah. I had a customer once want me to install the Arabic version on his Mac, and so we did. But then he got mad because it was Saudi Arabic, and he was Jordanian.
Right.
But he said he'd learned a lot of the technical words in English, so he was back translating what this word meant, what it said in Arabic and what it meant in English to figure out what the menu command actually
was. Well, I have a friend who ran a translation company for a while, and she said it was very difficult because in some languages, it you speak up to your superiors, you speak down to the people who work for you, and you speak straight to people on your level. Well, when you're writing and it's three different syntaxes, essentially.
Yeah.
So the question is, how do you write manuals?
In English, that's just snooty.
right. But do you assume that you are below or above or equal to the person who's reading the manual? It's and that's important.
They're reading the manual to learn, so they're below you.
Theoretically,
you already know.
Theoretically, yes.
Yeah.
But some of them could be doing it as a refresher course, and you don't want to insult their intelligence.
Right. Yeah. Or they're very, they're a boss, and they don't want to be spoken up to.
Mm-hmm.
Down to. They want to be spoken up to.
Right.
So, it's an interesting issue, and that's many languages now, many cultures rather, have an assumption of neutrality when it comes to technical stuff. So you speak as if they were a peer. You speak neither up nor down. You speak as if you were a peer, and that is a construct that is allowed no matter what your position, because it's a technical manual. But that's not necessarily true in every culture.
That'd be a good band name. Assumption of Neutrality.
Assumption of Neutrality. My new punk rock band.
Yeah. One hit wonder.
Yeah, right.
I really like that.
They have no hits because they're neutral.
Ooh. Bada bing.
There is a race in Futurama, the neutrals. They're Zap Brannigan hates them because they're so neutral.
They're so neutral.
And they have gray skin because they're neutral.
Yeah, right.
They won't make any decisions because they want to be neutral.
Right. What were we just... Chrome. The Chrome... I'm very excited about the Chrome thing. I really am. I don't do a lot of Windows stuff at all anymore, but one of my backup devices is an SMB Windows share device. Now, my Linux machine works with it perfectly, but right now, of course, my Chromebooks, I have to put in the extension, and the extension really doesn't work all that great.
Needs some fine tuning.
It needs to just go away. The file app in Chrome, a lot of people don't even actually pay much attention to the fact that it's there. But it's really kind of nice. The Files app gives you a direct link to your Google Drive, so you can automatically load and save files to that, move them back and forth just like you would any other drive.
Mm-hmm.
It also talks to your download area, and you can add other things. And one of the things that you can add new services. And when you go there, you can do Dropbox. I've already added the network file share for Chrome OS. There's a secure shell app, so I can SSH into one of my systems out in the real world.
Yep.
If I weren't blocking most IP addresses from them. That's how I do it.
Yeah, no, there's nothing wrong with that at all.
Right. But I can do all of that. So it's really, and other services can be installed from the web store. And like I said, one of them is the network file share, the SMB connection for Windows to connect to a Microsoft share. But the reality is that this extension does not work well. It drops in the middle of large files.
Mm.
It's just not pleasant.
It doesn't play well.
It doesn't play well with others, with anything. But I'm very much looking forward to 70 that will do that. And I think it's 70 that will allow me to access Linux programs, and then I'm going to buy a
new Chromebook
that will also let me do Android apps. So I'm very much looking forward to that. I've been saving my pennies.
There you go.
I've been saving my pennies, although I don't have as many pennies as I used to. We're talking about how nobody clicks on ads anymore, and everybody blocks ads, and certainly nobody's backed any of my sites. So I have less money than I had, but I do have enough for a new Chromebook, and I'm looking forward to getting one. Not a terrifically high-end one, but another one. So I'm looking forward to that. It should be interesting. Right now, I spend a lot of time at my desk because I'm retired, and I have a very large monitor because my eyes are so bad. So I do most of my work on Linux. But whenever I'm out, I've got a Chromebook.
Mm-hmm.
I take a laptop to teach because of various obvious reasons. But mostly I take a Chromebook when I'm out, and I can do everything I want to do. I can edit audio. I can edit video. I can do database stuff. I can do anything I want to do on my Chromebook. Except it is difficult for me at this point to access large files on a Windows network share.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm looking forward to the ability to be able to do that.
Well, that's like we got into discussion, you know, it's been a couple of weeks that we've gotten into it covering the Office products.
Right.
That, you know, Microsoft is actually, bottom line, easily put, they're running scared. Because Chromebooks and LibreOffice are putting a big scare to Microsoft because, oh, it's free.
Right.
Hello, and it can be shared amongst everybody, and they don't know whether you did it in WordPerfect or whether you did it in Word or OpenOffice or LibreOffice. It doesn't matter. It's there, and it does the same functions that an average person, even a student, an average student can find their way around and say LibreOffice and have it do the same things that they would have it do in Word. Because they're usually just doing up a paper.
Right.
You know, and it's nothing, you know, oh, this special indentation and all this other hyphening and all this other stuff. It's just not needed. So they can.
You can do all that stuff.
Oh, yes. You can certainly do it if you want to take the time and learn it.
And in Google Docs.
Yeah.
It's all doable. I haven't touched Microsoft Office in, I got to say, a decade. It's all been originally LibreOffice and now mostly Google Docs. Going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 19 minutes after the hour. Soundbites member supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. And you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Speaking of Google, which I like to do, I admit it, Google's Chrome browser version 70. Now, the operating system will be version 70,
mm-hmm.
and the browser itself will be version 70, is scheduled to begin rolling out to the stable channel on October 16th, and will bring a number of security refinements and minor performance improvements, as well as media tweaks. The browser will no longer display operating system build numbers in the user agent identification header on Android. For iOS users, that change will follow the platform standards and simply freeze the number at 15E148. Other information about devices will still be displayed in the header, such as WebKit versions and basic device information. Beyond that, Touch ID fingerprint scanning support is set to be added via the Web Authentication API for desktop platforms. Users will also notice that further UI changes will be incorporated to highlight security on desktop platforms. For media and inputs, Google is finally adding web Bluetooth features for Windows users, allowing sites to securely connect to nearby Bluetooth peripherals and devices that will, as with other platforms, be accessible via an experimental flag setting. AV1 decoding support is being added to all desktop platforms, in addition to barcode or QR code face and text detection across all platforms. Many of the new features and inclusions are effectively building on previous implementations in Chrome or refining those by forcing unsafe programs or pages to show a dialogue to leave full screen mode. Users will be able to see the context of any dialogue boxes in relation to how safe the page might be. In fact, even if the page hasn't been marked as unsafe by Google, it provides users an opportunity to look for URL address changes, which might point to other problems with that dialogue. So they're helping with that pop-up that says you're infected.
Yeah.
You'll see that it actually doesn't come from Microsoft or Apple or whoever. In general, the changes being implemented here will make Chrome and its subsequent variations more secure by both highlighting more more acutely when things aren't secure and adding support for more login protection options. At the same time, security is also bolstered by the removal of unnecessary attributes that identify what device is accessing a site and securing Bluetooth channels. Simultaneously, performance will be more customizable from a developer perspective thanks to the added ability to prioritize things further and separate processes to their own threads for high-intensity, highly interactive sites or web apps. Finally, the addition of support for incoming next-generation audio compression and modern detection algorithms will improve user experiences and offer new ones as well. In the meantime, there will almost certainly be even more changes arriving in Chrome OS 70, and some of the features currently planned and available in beta channels might change or be pushed back. So are you ready for a more secure and fuller browsing experience? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415.
There was a issue that some people have had with Chrome is up until now, when you go to a secure website, you get that nice green check mark.
Right.
They're going to reverse that. So when you go to a non-secure website, which is a lot of them, you're going to get a red non-secure.
Right.
There are a lot of websites that don't need to be secure, and so they don't. But we're going to be training people it's okay to click OK on non-secure websites, because a lot of them you go to that don't need to be secure will be warned. And that one time you go to the malicious website that comes up as not secure, you shouldn't skip it. But then on the other hand, it's so easy to put security on your website, the bad guys are doing it too. So you go to a malicious website, it's still secure.
Right. It's
secure, but it's malicious.
Right. The next thing, of course, is to say this is not the site it's pretending to be, but that's hard.
Yeah.
One of the issues that in general, Google has another initiative. I don't think I put this one in here. No. One of the things that Google has talked about is getting rid of URLs entirely.
Well, Tim Berners-Lee said he never intended those to be visible anyway.
Right. But the problem with that is because of UTF-8 and extended character sets, you can go to apple.com and it's not Apple, but it looks like that on your screen because of the character set you're using.
Even like a Greek alpha is close enough to an A that people wouldn't notice.
Right, right.
But there are other alphabets that are perfectly looking like the English alphabet, but it's the wrong character. And so to a computer, it's a completely different website.
Right, but you see apple.com.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so it's a real problem, and they're all trying to figure out how to handle all this. Because remember, the web was designed to be an open protocol. It really was just reading scientific papers over a connection from one university to another. That was the point. And we've turned it into this amazing time suck, but we haven't really changed the way it all works. So we keep kludging things onto it in order to make it more secure and make it different. But you're right. You know, now you can get free
certificates.
Let's Encrypt is free security certificates. So, you know, all my sites now are secure. There's one. That's not apple.com.
Yep. So Firefox, maybe I might have turned it off. It's different in different browsers. So in Safari, it shows the real website code, you know, xn-80ak6aa92e.com.
Right.
But in the right language, that looks like apple.com.
Right. And so, you know, all my websites now are secured.
Mm-hmm.
And not all of them are free.
The ASCII text.
Right. But it's easy to do. And you're right. It isn't necessary for some websites. For example, nickf.com. You can't sign into it. You know, I'm the nobody can sign into it.
Mm-hmm.
I do it all in the background. So why does it need to be secure? Well, partially because Google dings you on their search algorithm if you're not secure. And it was free, so I put it on. But yeah, it isn't necessary on that particular site. But in many cases, it is necessary. And we should all be only, we should be very, very careful that we are on secure websites, particularly when we're not in our house. But even in your house, when you're on wireless, you want to make sure that you are on a secure site when you're doing things like banking and stuff like that. Now, at this point, I don't know of a banking system that isn't secured. But the point is you want to make sure that you are and that it is correct. And one of the things you can do, at least on Chrome, is you can click on the lock, the little lock.
Mm-hmm.
And it pulls it down and says your connection is secure, your information is private, and you can click on the certificate, and you can actually see to whom this certificate belongs. So, for example, right now I'm on Google Docs, and it indeed says that this is a an SSL server certificate, and the common name is Google.com, and the organization is Google LLC. Well, that's a pretty clear indication that I'm in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's the sort of thing, that you can do. One of the things that I have to,
did you see that other article though, talking about Firefox and Chrome that Microsoft might get in hot water for?
No.
That, they're telling, or advising folks not to use Firefox.
Yeah, Nick posted that.
I posted it. I see. That's then. Yes.
Not to use Firefox.
You've already
and
got
Chrome.
The best browser.
You got to use their Edge.
Right. Well. Yeah. What it says is that when you go to install Firefox or Chrome, you get a pop-up box that says you're already using the most secure web browser, and then your choices are stick with this or install it anyway. Well, it didn't. The European Union fined Microsoft millions of dollars for doing something similar?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. You know, didn't
the
they
past,
get,
yeah.
get in hot water already yeah. once? Well, so they're, now they're going to try it here because, you know, it's...
Well, they're not preventing you from installing
it. Oh, yeah, no. They just turn their wording around a little
bit,
you know, to dance a little... easier around those thumbtacks and marbles sitting on the floor.
Yeah, right, exactly. The little Legos sitting there.
Hit your feet on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a very tricky thing. The problem, of course, is, and we've talked about this before, the number one use of Microsoft Edge is to download Chrome. The number two use of Microsoft Edge is to download Firefox.
Yeah.
Those are statistics. We know this. And it does anger Microsoft
again.
Just a
it's
bit.
Just one more sword in their side.
Yep.
That you know, there's other products that are a heck of a lot better than their stupid browser because Explorer has been a piece of junk from day one. It's got more holes than Swiss cheese.
Right.
It's been under attack for decades. Since it first rolled out, it's got to cover this exploit, net exploit, you know. Whereas Firefox and then Chrome, they came out and they were a lot more on top of patching stuff if it was attacked.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Whereas Microsoft, well, it's not Patch Tuesday yet.
And Microsoft just did a survey. They were talking about that on the last GRC too, not the last one, the recent one, about how people liked updates. And the vast majority of people hated updates. They were obtrusive. They made things worse. We want fewer of them. And apparently the people at Microsoft were surprised about that.
What a shock, huh?
Yeah.
All right. We've got somebody just texted in on the text line, which is 585-209-9010. Really annoyed at Chrome for chopping off what Google thinks is trivial, like www. it's arbitrary, and whatever Google thinks is good.
Yeah, most sites are www.something. They don't have to be, but
fewer
by convention,
are than
they
used
are.
To be.
Yeah.
But yes, and so you can type in, for example, asknick.com or www.asknick.com. It takes you to the same place. Some which that are www. But when people go to www, they want to see it there. And when they don't see it, they think, well, for a moment, there's a thought of I'm in a different site. And sites like Google suppress that. Because the naming convention goes, the last thing, the .com or .edu or whatever, is the top-level domain. Right? It's .com, .edu, .net,
.org.
It's, right. The next one is your organization. So Soundbites, Ask Nick, Jazz901. The one after that is a sub-site on your site. And sometimes, when it's www in particular, Google feels that's redundant. Because, of course, it's a web server. You're going to a web server. Yeah. You're in a browser. The only place you can go is a web
you're
server.
You're on a computer searching.
We're already hiding the HTTP.
Right. Yeah. We're already hiding the HTTP or HTTPS, and now replacing it with a green secure if it's HTTPS, and eventually taking that away and instead replacing it with a not secure, red, not secure if it's not HTTPS. And they're just making it easier to see. Well, Google is mostly engineers, and engineers like efficiency.
Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily make it obvious, but more efficient. And I get it. People get annoyed by that. But
Apple added a toggle in a recent version of Safari called Show Full Website Address. And with that turned on, you see the domain, the slash, all of the subdomains, you know,
right.
And everything to get to that page you're looking at, which most people don't need and don't care and don't want to see. So you can turn that off and just see the web page you're on.
Right. But yeah, you can look at it either way. Sometimes, and I think there's a toggle for that in Chrome as well, but I don't know where it is off the top of my
probably.
Head.
Probably. There are so many things in Chrome you can turn on and
so
off.
So many things.
Oh, we just got another good text in. Soundbites. I helped my sister-in-law purchase a Chromebook last week at a big store in Long Island. When finished with the transaction, he tried selling us Microsoft Office. Good one!
Well, you know, if he had done so, he would have won.
Yeah, because how do you install
simple.
It?
You don't install it. You just put it on your shelf, just in case.
To sit there.
I would have liked to have seen how that return would have worked. You know, I tried installing this, and it says it won't work. Well, you can't.
Well, where are you going to install it to begin with?
Well, Microsoft Office doesn't come on disk anymore. It's
right,
a download.
That's true.
And so, I bet if you go to the Microsoft download site, it will let you download it.
It'll let you pay for it, certainly.
It's a Windows XE. It won't run. Or it's a Mac DMG, neither of which will run on a Chromebook.
Right.
But then you go back to the store to return it. You can't return open software.
Yeah,
that's right.
Because usually that means you stole it and just want to get your money back.
That's right. I think he might have tried to sell them Office 365, right?
That could be, and that will work in Chrome. And because it's Microsoft, the same name applies to radically different and different products.
Right.
So the Office 365 subscription can be web only, it can be Windows, it can be Mac, or it can be iOS or Windows Mobile. And so if you run the web only version, it would work just fine in your Chromebook.
Right.
For paying, you know, $100 a year for Microsoft Office.
Right, when you could get Google Docs for free.
For free, yeah.
Right. But they will happily take your money. And again, people think, well, I have to have it because everybody else uses Microsoft. Well, no.
Not anymore.
First, not anymore. Yeah. Right, exactly. But secondly, a lot of people have to understand that you can download Google Docs as a .docx file, or you can just send them the link and they can view it online. LibreOffice also lets you save and read files on Google, Microsoft formats. So you can do all of that stuff without any trouble at all, and it's easy to do. Okay, our next caller is Mike. No. Well, hold on, Mike. We got to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll talk to you. We'll be back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Mike, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 41 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. It is member-supported Jazz 90.1, and we are professionals.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. I am happy to say that I've logged into my Outlook, Microsoft Outlook email, and I'm all caught up. It's the first time I've logged into it in 2 years, and I'm still all caught up.
Spam, 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 spam.
Yeah, right.
Wonderful spam.
Wonderful spam. All right, back to the phones. Our caller really is, and he's been very patient, Mike from Webster, New York. What's up, Mike?
Good afternoon. Just as a preliminary, I've been using LibreOffice on your recommendation, Nick, for a few years, and for the most part, I'm very happy with it.
Good.
So there's an endorsement.
Thanks.
The September 11th Windows update, I have two issues following that. None of my software, Hotmail emails or anything else, or Amazon, save my login information anymore when I turn off the computer.
Oh.
And I very carefully click the save login or whatever that little box is, but it still doesn't save it. Thing that's going on that's sort of similar is I have a Avast antivirus and a Avast password. And I have a little warning box. I use Chrome. So where the Avast password icon is to the right of the browser bar, there's a little exclamation point, and I clicked on it, and it says that the extension is not activated. Please activate it first. I went into the Chrome menu to More Tools and Extensions, and Avast password is indicated as being on.
So it's someplace it's on, someplace it's off, and it seems to really be off because it's not saving your passwords.
Right.
Have you tried turning it off, rebooting, and turning it back on?
Yes, I've gone through I've gotten to the point where I use the computer and I go through the shutdown process, and the next time I go to use it, I go through the boot up process for a couple of reasons, one of which is to make it as hard as possible so I'll use it less.
Right. Right. Now, is it only generated passwords or passwords you've typed in or both or what?
Both.
Okay.
So some of them, I don't think, are in Avast password.
Right.
And they just keep coming up from normally because the little icon sometimes doesn't show up. But the login information is still there. So I think that's done within the software.
Right.
I wonder if uninstalling Avast passwords would help. I just found a tech note on resetting Avast passwords.
Right.
Well, yeah, looked at it in settings, but that brings up the same screen that I saw under More Tools and Extensions.
Right. You mean in Avast?
My concern is that if I uninstall and then reinstall,
you lose all your passwords.
Yes, will I?
Yeah. All right. Now, you said the other place is in Chrome?
that's all I use. So
yeah. All right. So under if you go to the navigation bar where you normally type in a URL.
Yes.
And you type in Chrome:// settings.
Right.
You'll see all your settings, and one of them, and you could do a search to search for autofill. There is a choice for enable autofill to fill out web forms in a single click, and another one that says offer to save passwords I enter on the web. Make sure both of these are still checked.
Okay.
It's under passwords and forms, now that I say that.
Okay.
And of course, make sure that you're signed into Chrome with the account that you used to save them originally.
Okay.
Right, because in terms of Chrome, reinstalling isn't going to hurt because the passwords are saved in the cloud, not in the operating system, not in on your computer.
Right, but I still have to be able to. I still have to know my login or my sign up for
a master password.
Yeah.
For Avast password, for Avast.
Well, I wasn't talking about Avast yet. I was talking about Chrome.
Okay.
Right. So this is strictly Chrome.
Right.
So in terms of Chrome, you could uninstall and reinstall because the passwords are saved in the cloud. But first, make sure that the passwords in under passwords and forms, both enable autofill and offer to save passwords are checked.
Okay.
That's for Chrome only. Now, let's talk about Avast.
Yeah, I'm trying to see if there's a way to if you uninstall it, if you lose your data. I want to say no because the password file is a separate file. But if you reset your passwords, then yes, you do lose your data.
Yeah, now it's an extension, I think, in this particular case. And Avast has an extension for Chrome, and that may also have been turned off. So go into your extensions.
That I checked that, and it's on.
And you've tried turning it off and on again.
No, I didn't cycle it.
Yeah, I would cycle it.
Okay.
First, I'd make sure that the passwords are turned on in Chrome itself.
Right.
Then I would do that the extensions theoretically are automatically installed during setup. But if there was an update, it might have turned that extension. But you say you checked that and the extension is on.
Okay.
But also check the options for that extension and make sure that they're all checked correctly too. But that's where I'd start.
Okay.
Okie doke.
Yes. Thank you much.
All right. Thanks.
And if you have to reset your passwords, this is a good, good time to set up new, stronger passwords.
Right.
Although since he's using a password manager, he's probably using strong passwords already.
Right. Yeah. And we were talking a little bit about databases for Google, for Chrome, for Chrome OS or the Chromebooks. And the one that I use is called JackDB, which lets me talk to MySQL. It also talks to SQL Server, PostgreSQL, MariaDB, Oracle. And there's another one whose name escapes me at the moment. I can't think of what it's called, but you can find it through OblivDB. I forget which it is, and that saves the databases. That's if you don't have access to a MySQL or a PostgreSQL or a SQL Server database anywhere. It saves it on the OblivDB. I forget exactly how the Oblivion database, OblivDB.
That's from Elder Scrolls.
Yeah, well, maybe not. If you go to the Chrome Web Store and search for database.
It's probably both, but my searching keeps coming up for Elder Scrolls.
Right. ObviDB, ObviBase. There it is, ObviBase. And that one works, but it also saves it in ObviBase's servers. So that's not necessarily as secure. But on the other hand, you don't, you know, I have my own web server, so I can access those things. That's easy for me. But for the average person, they may prefer Obvibase, which means you don't have to have a database of your own set up anywhere. But both of those work, and they work very well, and you can create databases with both and manage databases. And Obvibase really kind of looks like a spreadsheet, so it's really intuitive, really easy to use. But again, you're saving the database in somebody else's server, so, you know, be aware that that is what it is, and you got to live with that. Whereas JackDB, you set up your own database and you manage it your own self, so that's easy enough.
I thought you didn't know Jack.
I don't know Jack, but if I did know Jack, I could use his database without any trouble. All right, that music tells me that we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. Those of you who called in late, I'm sorry. Call in earlier next time. That's all. I'm sorry. But we're done. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I'll even thank myself. But don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you will hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow, so it's fairly safe to listen. And we'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we can continue with your generosity to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours.